Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to What Happened When? With the voice of your childhood, Tony Schiavone. Tony, what's going on, man? How are you?
Well, for someone who's been living with Lois for 42, almost 43 years now, I'm doing great. You know, next week is our 43rd wedding anniversary. Thank you.
Big deal.
Really?
I think so. I mean, you guys have been married longer than I've been alive. I mean, I'll be 43 at the end of June, about a month out as we're recording this. But I don't guess I really put that together. But you guys got married around the same time I was born. A lot of great stuff happened.
Yeah, 81.
It was a great year. Come on, it's a good year.
Yeah. Well, so that's happening. And when you think about it in today's age, not many people of our age have lasted 43 years.
That's true.
Especially in the wrestling business. And I think a lot of that has to be attributed to that fact that Lois never liked wrestling and never followed it and never got caught up in all the drama that goes on. And of course, I didn't travel like wrestlers did back in the 80s. So I was home a lot more. And that goes to help out. But I think us, the fact that I do travel and I am not home all the time also helped out a little bit too. Anyway, so there it is, 43, coming up very, very soon. By the time it's on the 6th of June, which will be a Thursday. So it'll be right after we air our next podcast. But anyway, it's good to see you. It's good to be talking to you once again and be talking to ever with us this morning. My goddaughter Brooke is with us. Hello, Brooke. Eric Green, Bill. I think that's the last.
Look at you with that big enunciation. Wherever you are, we're glad you're joining us here today. We're going to be doing a special watch along, and this is kind of a fun idea. We are going to have later this week Eric Bischoff take a look at a Nitro from May 31st, 1999. So the Memorial Day weekend Nitro from 99. But what we're doing here with you today, Tony, is we're watching a Memorial Day Monday Night Raw from the same day, May 31st, 1999. It's quite a show. Of course, this was a tape show, and we had a sellout here for the World Wrestling Federation, 9,755 fans paying roughly $215,000 at the gate. And in a dark match that night, saw a very young Kurt Angle in ring. How about that, man? This is the Kurt Angle dark match era. Yeah, quite a run here in 1999 and 2000. And well, you know the rest. But as I understand it, you never watched any of this Monday Night Raw business back in the day, right?
No, I never did. A lot of the people watched. Not a lot of the WWE people back then watched Nitro because we had the replay on later in the night. And did USA have a replay of Raw later?
No, they did not. No.
Okay. So I didn't watch it. And again, I don't watch it now. I've said it many times on this program. I try to get involved with my stuff and not worry about what they're doing because it's not my job to worry about what they're doing. And I see plenty of wrestling anyway. I see everything that we do. Mondays or Wednesdays and Saturdays and pay-per-views. So I do not get caught up in what's going on with them. I hear about what's going on with them because a lot of people talk about it backstage.
Sure.
So I'm kind of familiar with what's going on, but I don't follow it. And I didn't follow it back then. It goes back to the old adage I've talked about before on this podcast. It's the old Vin Scully mentality that you don't listen to any other announcer because you don't want to try to copy their style. You want to be your own person. That's it.
Nobody's copying your style, my man. And what a crazy spectacle you had over the weekend. One of the wildest doggone pay-per-views of all time. And, it looks like it just finished. AEW Double or Nothing from this past weekend in Las Vegas. I've never seen anything like several things on that show. But needless to say, the Anarchy in the Arena match is going to be a match that folks don't forget about for quite a while, if I had to guess, Tony.
No, some things happened in that match. Obviously, the one thing that happened was Jack Perry getting burned, but a lot of things happened in that match. Darby being tied up by his legs. It's like, and as that's going on, to be honest with you, I'm thinking, what the fuck are we doing? And it was, but again, you're right. It's memorable, right? It's yes. Things that happen that you're going to remember for a long, long time. When people say, hey, did you ever see AEW Double or Nothing? You go say, yeah, that, I remember when they burned Jack Perry and they tied Darby Allin upside down and he wore a face guard with tacks in it.
You know, like as crazy as all that you just said was, the thing that will stand out for me is them running around blasting music like it was New Jack. Right. The people getting their ass whipped to a soundtrack. Like the final countdown moment of Brian Danielson just whipping people's ass all over the arena. It felt like a movie. It was super fun. I know that, you know, listen, the people who've decided they don't like AEW, I'm sure they found something to critique about it. I was watching it with one of my good wrestling buddies, Bart, and man, we just loved the show. Thought you guys hit a home run. And I know, you know, there's lots of analysts who are going to pick it apart, but I got my money's worth, by God. It was a good show. We hope you checked it out. We hope you'll continue to support AEW and everything that Tony does. He is the voice of AEW, whether anybody wants to acknowledge that or not. Put some respect on his name and tune in tonight as you're listening to this, because Dynamite will be live. Of course, we got a big collision right around the corner. They're winding down those damn pesky NBA playoffs. We know now the Celtics are in the finals, so we're going to be back to normal sooner rather than later with some of the scheduling, Tony. And you and I haven't talked about it on the show, but you're going to be doing an esports arena residency for a bit.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, knowing that Mike Mansory and guys like that are going to be able to really stretch out and try some different things, I'm kind of excited about what that might look like, Tony.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too. Esports arena. By the way, that arena is right there where the Cowboys play and where the Rangers, right in that area. So it's a pretty familiar part of Arlington, Texas, of the Dallas Metroplex. Not like it's sequestered somewhere in a suburb or something like that where we live. So I'm looking forward to that. I've never been to that esports arena. It's going to be interesting to see how we do. And I really, I'm excited that they're going to be, we're also going to be taping some Ring of Honor matches, which is good. It's an interesting idea leading up to, of course, All In coming up on 25th of August. I want to go back very briefly and say something about Double or Nothing. That's not, has nothing to do with the matches in Double or Nothing. I guess I shouldn't have been, but I was kind of blown away how versatile Jeff Jarrett is.
Yeah.
That fucker can do it all. Literally can do it all. Right?
Yeah, I totally agree. Five-tool player, man. I've been a big fan of Jeff Jarrett. As a kid, I hated him. He was my human fast-forward button. We even joked about that on Bruce's podcast, Something to Wrestle, but I was not a fan. And then once I actually got to know Jeff, it was like, oh, that was the idea. I'm a goof. Yeah. This guy has done everything in front of the camera, behind the camera. I think he's done everything except run the camera.
Right.
Shout out to Jeff, who I thought more than held his own in a debut effort to sort of host a pre-show. And that was on the heels of a pretty big, fun match with him and Brian Danielson in the ring together.
Yeah.
What can't he do? We hadn't found it yet.
I sent him a note. I said, dude, I said, for an old fucker, you can certainly do everything. And I was just blown away by, and maybe I shouldn't have been, maybe I should have known that Jeff Jarrett can do I thought his work on the pregame show, of course, to me, I love RJ City. You know, some people do, some people don't. I just think he's a very talented, very positive guy. And is works pretty hard behind the scenes as well. Renee is, to me, the single most talented person I think I've ever worked with as far as on camera work. She just everything is so natural to her, and she's so good at what she does. But when they threw Jeff Jarrett in, then Jeff was just, I just thought he did a masterful job. And I even let him know that, I said, for old fucker, you can just about do anything in wrestling. Wrestle, talk, like you said, everything probably, hell, he could probably run a camera too if need be.
Well, I'm anxious to see what's next for Jeff. I've really enjoyed what we've seen from him lately. And, I think it was a really fun wrestling weekend for AEW. I mean, just a fun wrestling weekend overall. We had Big Queen and King of the Ring show on Saturday, then a Collision Saturday night, then the Anarchy in the Arena match to cap off one hell of a showing for Sunday night in Las Vegas. And the beat goes on, man. We're going to be back to our regularly scheduled programming again with Dynamite and Collision this week. But before we do, we're going to have a little fun watching this episode of Monday Night Raw from May 31st, 1999. We want you to pull your peacock out. Go to Season 7, Episode 22. That's Season 7, Episode 22 of Monday Night Raw. Again, it aired on 5/31/99. It is a huge show. Raw did a 6.23 rating and a 10.1 share. Meanwhile, Nitro would do a 3.26.
So, there is no try.
You all right, Tony?
Yeah, I'm good. Why? What happened?
I don't know. Just hearing your "there is no try." Is that a ringtone from Yoda?
I don't hear anything. It's not from my end.
Okay. It's not your phone? You don't have Yoda talking on your phone?
No, I don't have Yoda on my phone. Hang on a second. Son of a bitch.
What?
All right, let me cut off. Yeah, I can't hear my, for some reason, my phone is going through.
It's not on my end. God damn it. Get your shit together. Wait, that was me. Hang on. Dude, Tony, I say we watch some slapdick wrestling. Monday Night Raw, Season 7, Episode 22. It went down on May 31st, 1999. Tony, you got a special countdown for us?
Yes, as a matter of fact, as you know, President Joe Biden stopped by the house and did a count. He did.
Okay.
He did a countdown. And we also have someone else in politics who's done a countdown for us, which I thought was pretty amazing because I had to have her and her staff and her Secret Service people come by the house without Lois being here, because Lois would have like gone apeshit. You know how Lois is,
right? Sure.
About politics. So here we go. Here's our special countdown.
This is your soon-to-be first woman president of the United States, AOC. I'm here with this week's countdown for those two evil right-wingers, Conrad and Tony. Okay, let's get ready to tax the rich in 3, 2, 1, play.
Here we go. Got the signature open. The WWF. Again, this is May 31st, Memorial Day weekend, 1999. I graduated high school 11 days prior to this, Tony. How about that?
Whoa. Long time ago. So this happened last Sunday, and we're in the midst of, I guess, The Undertaker and Stone Cold. Oh, with the McMahons involved, right?
Yep.
Shane, and then here comes, what? His shoulder was up. Oh, here comes the old man.
Unfortunately, just to give you context, what we're seeing clips of and highlights from are Over the Edge 1999. Mm-hmm. So this, I believe, is unfortunately the show where Owen fell.
This show right here?
Yep.
Oh.
I mean, not the Monday Night Raw we're watching, but the clips that we're seeing on this Monday Night Raw from the pay-per-view.
Right.
That was Over the Edge 1999. That was the main event, of course, but sadly, along the way, we lost Owen Hart. And we're actually going to get a rematch here from that pay-per-view. Steve Austin versus The Undertaker. It's going to do a 6.8 rating and a 7.3 overrun. Meanwhile, what you guys are putting head-to-head with Stone Cold versus The Undertaker for the title, it's Sting and Rick Steiner for the television title, with Tank Abbott making his debut as the special guest referee. So it's a 6.8 to a 2.9. Monday Night Raw wins the day.
Yeah. Emphatically wins the day. Hey, and we tried with Tank Abbott, right? We thought he would be big numbers.
Yeah, you were trying.
What did we fucking know? I'm being facetious.
About the signs. Isn't it fun to see the signs? Just a sea of signs.
Yes. Yes.
I'd love to eat Chinese. Chinese. Boy, that's you right there.
I don't like Chinese. The signs, I think the signs back then were pretty cool. I think a lot of the signs today are fucking ridiculous.
There's still signs today? There's a lot of signs today? I hadn't paid attention.
There's not a lot of signs today. There are signs today that they just want to, you know.
Everybody's trying to get themselves over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there was one sign that was at Double or Nothing that says, "We just love pro wrestling," or something like that, that I thought was so cool. It was a positive sign. You know, people try to put up signs that says, "Cornette is God," or, you know, they just trying to.
Imagine bringing that to an AEW show.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? Huh? Bringing that to an AEW show. There's China.
Yeah, unfortunately, Big Boss Man right there with her. I was thinking, man, how many people are no longer with us? Because there's Paul Bearer, there's Viscera, Boss Man, there's Test, there's China. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
They've got their own little faction going.
There's that "I love to eat Chinese" sign again.
No, turns out that wasn't Test. That's Triple H doing his best Test impression. I didn't know he dressed like that with the titties out. Look at that. That's a look. I'd love to see him show up to a WWE press conference dressed like that.
Okay, so this is pretty weird.
Yeah, that's the symbol, is the way they would try to train the fans at home. It's not a cross. It's a symbol. It's fucking stupid is what it is.
Well, you know what? There's been a lot of stupid things in wrestling throughout the years on all sides of the fence. So... again, it goes to not trying to defend them, or I guess I am defending them. It goes back to you just try to show some shit and see if it works, what doesn't.
Hey, again, I know we don't talk about current stuff, so I'm not trying to have this big conversation, but, you know, my dad and I, we used to spend a few days together, at least every week. We'd go to breakfast together, we'd go to lunch together, we'd play checkers at the office or what have you, but I wound up spending last week at the beach with the wife. So I haven't been around dad. And so he's trying to make conversation with me on Memorial Day. And on Monday, he sends me a text and says, "Hey, there was a big pay-per-view last night. How was it?" So I sent him the image of Jack Perry being set on fire. And he goes, "Son, is that guy dead?" I said, "Dad, I hope you're sitting down, but not only is he not dead, he won the match." And dad's like, "What are you watching? That's some silly shit." You know, Larry, just being Larry. And I'm like, "No, that's wrestling. Turns out you can get set ablaze. You'll be fine. Kane, Jack Perry, same, same. He's fine." But dad's just a normal human. "Is that guy dead, son?" "No, dad. In fact, he won."
God, so many things can go wrong when something like that happens. Oh, would you look at one of the freaking Godwins?
Yeah, that's Dennis Knight, who, believe it or not, I'm going to be sitting down with for adfreeshows.com.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, think about all the fun that guy had in WCW, in the WWF. I mean, I think a lot of people forget he was even in WCW.
Of course he was. Yeah. Yes.
Shanghai Pierce, Tex Slazenger. Before they were the Godwins, they were badasses in WCW.
Yeah, they. Is he going to cook for you?
Man, wouldn't that be something?
Because, you know, he's a chef.
That's what I hear.
Yes. I think he's a gourmet chef. He's one of the guys like you see on The Bear. You've seen that
Chef.
Television
Chef.
On Hulu. Yes, Chef.
Yes, Chef. So listen, this is my least favorite Undertaker. I know a lot of our listeners just absolutely love the Undertaker, and more power to them. I was never really a huge Undertaker fan. I certainly respect his contributions to the business and his longevity and his star power. But this particular version was a real eye roller for me. I understand they're trying to go darker and they're trying to have some references to the occult and things like that, but it just came off as fucking goofy to me. What do you think of this presentation of The Undertaker?
Loved it.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah, I did. It was just different. I had known Mark Callis before he was, you know, when he was Mean Mark Callis. And I remember all of us thinking that, boy, this guy is going to be a star. We ain't going to make him a star because we're in the Jim Herd era, but he is going to be a star. And they made him a star. And I thought, that is so fucking cool. And this is what, to me, I know you like the motorcycle guy, right? The badass.
Yeah, American badass.
American badass. But to me, this is what made him a star, right? All this cult with the druids. And to me, this is what you think of when you think of The Undertaker. I'm wrong.
I don't think of this version. I think of like that early look when he debuted and he had like the gray and then the purple gloves or vice versa. I'm colorblind, but
that, maybe so.
That maybe traditional maybe. Look, not this robed cloak and dagger bullshit.
Okay. Well, Mr. McMahon has arrived. He and his son are having it out.
What do you think? You think we'll ever see Vince McMahon do anything in wrestling again?
No. If he was in his 50s, maybe. I know you think we will.
Yeah.
And of course, ego can drive people. But if I'm the age of Vince McMahon, and I'm not that far off, if I'm the age of Vince McMahon, what is he right now? 75, 76?
He's up okay. There.
Okay. And I'm a multi-billionaire. What the fuck do I want to do shit again for? Enjoy the remaining years in your life. I guess if you got an ego that says you got to work or that you've got to be involved, I guess the remaining years of your life, enjoying the remaining years is working. But not for me, dude.
Oh, no, I totally agree. He's going to be 79 in August.
Yeah. Here's the deal. See, Bug over here, if I have his money, I have a whole farm of bugs. And I'm going to rescue dogs. There's a guy in Maryland. I see him on Instagram a lot. It's called Big Man, Little World or something like that. And it's a former bodybuilder who just rescues Chihuahua. And he has like 100 Chihuahuas living in his house. I'm thinking, isn't that the greatest thing in the world? That's what I would do with my money. I wouldn't do. But do you really think he's going to, do you have some inside information that you know? Or you just read more than I do. You obviously do follow social media more than I do.
No, I don't have any inside information. I'm just thinking, okay. You know. Yeah. I just want to remind everybody when people are like, oh, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Who else do you know who would launch the XFL twice?
Yeah.
Like after you lost all that cash the first time, you still got enough moxie, but maybe not enough sense to say, maybe not. He did it a second time. So I just can't imagine that the last word on him or his legacy or I don't see him going quietly. I think he's going to fight it. And I think if we've heard correctly that he's hired this big high-powered PR firm, I mean, I've even been told that they charge something crazy, like $11,000 an hour. If that's true, that's not the actions of somebody who doesn't want to be a public person.
There you go.
But we'll see.
Good call. But what a life, huh? What a career. No one, I don't think anyone saw it taking this turn.
No.
But there you go.
Hey, we got a question from our live studio audience. By the way, I should mention that you can be a part of this live studio audience. You can join us at adfreeshows.com or, of course, patreon.com/WHW Monday. Aaron Sheen, who's with us live, says, Hey, Tony, was Jack Perry getting set on fire the craziest thing you've seen in all your years in the business? You've seen some crazy stuff, but that's kind of hard to beat. I mean, I know there was almost a tease a couple of years ago when down came Eddie Kingston with a gas can, and it looks like, oh my God, what's he going to do with that? And then I'll be damned if Darby didn't actually set a motherfucker on fire. That's not a sentence you think you'd hear in wrestling, but it happened.
Yeah, that's going to be one of them. I don't know if it's the craziest thing that I've ever seen. We've seen a lot of crazy things. I think Edge, and I can call him Edge here, but I think Adam Copeland going to the top of the cage.
Oh my gosh.
Doing an elbow drop at his time in his career. He's not a kid anymore. Is one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Darby being hung upside down is crazy. And the music and the fans singing the final countdown as the battle goes on all together. It's going to be probably the craziest match I've ever seen. I think that one match will go down as the craziest match I've ever seen. And what I thought about when it was all over and I'm leaving, a lot of us had red eye flights out that night. As I'm going to the airport, I'm thinking, I know this is not the last Anarchy in the Arena match that we will see, but what the fuck are they going to try to do to top this?
The same thing. I don't think it can be topped, right?
I don't think it can be, but I think those idiots are going to try. And I say idiots because I always tell them, guys, oh geez, come on, somebody will really get hurt one day. Hopefully not, but I say it just try to calm them down a little bit. But yeah, we're going to have another Anarchy in the Arena match, and they're going to say, hey, remember we set Jack Perry on fire? Yeah. What can we do to top that? Anyway.
Hey, I know we don't talk about this sort of thing, and I'm not looking for scoops, but I am just genuinely concerned. Do you think the real-life Adam Copeland's okay after that big cage bump? Because everybody in my house was like, hey, man, that I don't know if you recall, but you were in WCW when Randy Savage came off the top at a Halloween Havoc in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And it was reminiscent of that to me because it's like, man, that's a long way to fall. But if I recall correctly, Randy was hurt pretty good from that because your body's just not supposed to fall like that. Do you think Mr. Copeland's going to be all right?
Well, I have not reached out to him and it doesn't matter. I need to reach out to him. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do right now. Send him a text as we're talking. I haven't reached out to him. Normally I go in the backstage area and try to check in on the medical and see how guys are. But again, we were trying to get to a flight, but, I don't know. I don't know if he is. Have you heard anything that I haven't heard?
No, I haven't. I just wanted to check on him. And unfortunately we did hear some news about our great friend, Eddie Kingston. Looks like he injured himself pretty severely in that New Japan match. He's going to be on the shelf, going to have surgery. We're probably looking close to a year on a return. Yeah. And I know that Eddie is publicly saying, oh, it's wrestling, it's part of it. But as a fan of his, I'm really going to miss him. I hope that we can find some way to keep him, you know, involved somehow. He's just entertaining. I mean, that dude reading the phone book would crack me up.
I called Eddie the other day and we had a nice long conversation. It's, I tell Eddie this all the time. I said, you're my favorite wrestler of all time. And he goes, come on. I said, no, you are. Cause you're just real.
Yes.
Just absolutely real. And there's nothing phony about you. It's like the Eddie Kingston that we see on TV is the real Eddie Kingston. And I'm not saying he's the greatest wrestler of all time because he's not, but he's my favorite. And I always enjoy doing an Eddie Kingston match. I always enjoy when Eddie's backstage. I always enjoy just talking to Eddie on the phone. And he's just the best. And yeah, he's going to be out for a while. So our best wish to him, but he'll come back and he'll be a viable part of what we do. And I'm, when we go back and when this is all said and done, as they say, and who knows when that will be, it'll probably be years and decades from now. I think one of the great things that AEW did was let the world discover Eddie Kingston on a national level. Because I hadn't heard of Eddie Kingston. He was just floundering in the independents, broke, loving wrestling. I mean, really a student of the game of wrestling, as we know, especially, you know, Japanese wrestling. I think one of the great things we did was put Eddie Kingston on a national level for people to see.
I mean, I remember watching one of his, when he was first on AEW programming, back when Cody was doing the open challenge, I was so excited to see him get his opportunity that I just went nuts on social media trying to get anyone to pay attention and maybe think, hey, this could be his shot. Because I'd been a fan of his going back to like 04. So at this point, like 20 years when I first saw him on the independents, that I recall seeing him thinking, hey, I like this guy's attitude. I didn't use this word back then. I like this guy's swagger. But we just saw the Big Show just jump over the top rope there. Look at this, man.
Yeah. How about that? For a guy his size.
Anyway, I was really happy to see him get a shot on national TV. And my buddy Dre, the bartender there at the Boot, my old watering hole back in Huntsville, I said, hey, man, take a look at this. Because his promos, man, they're just believable. You don't have to be a wrestling fan. You don't have to have the context of what the feud was. It was just a random promo he did for some independent promotion to build anticipation for a match. But it felt like high-level acting. I mean, I know on some level that's what these performances are, but Eddie Kingston delivers promos with such passion and believability that in another universe, and I know he would think this is the most hilariously dumb shit I ever said, it's almost Shakespearean. Like that guy was, you could drop him off and give him a little bit of time. He could be doing a play somewhere. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it, real talent, real skill to make me believe. And Eddie does that.
Yeah. And he would rather wrestle than talk.
Yes.
It's like Eddie would like you to do promo. Oh, really? Yes, Eddie. That's how you get over, is how you do promos. And you can really get over. Because you can really do them. So please.
Come do one.
Hey, how about Daddy Ass in the ring right now? Is Billy Gunn an incredible guy, just in many ways.
I mean, this is 25 years ago, Tony, and somehow he looks the same. It's like he is an action figure traveling through time and space.
Yeah.
Because respectfully, Road Dogg don't look like that.
All right.
Big Show don't look like that. Jimmy Corderas doesn't look like that. Somehow, what the hell? Billy Gunn still looks just like this.
Told me after his match he had on Sunday, he's too old for this shit. As a matter of fact, he did it by looking over at the ropes and looking at me at the broadcast. And he said, I'm too old for this shit. So I told him backstage, I said, you're not too old for this shit. I said, you're going to live forever, dude. Here's another person that is a genuine guy. Genuine. I love genuine people. And Eddie Kingston's one. Billy Gunn is one. If you have a shitty match, don't go asking Billy Gunn how it was.
He's not here to make you feel good. He's here to tell the truth.
Yeah, your feelings may be hurt. I told him, I said, dude, if I ran a company, you'd be with me everywhere. You'd be my go-to guy.
Well, I know we don't talk about current stuff, but I saw in the news over the weekend, I guess there was a big announcement teased at the start of the week on Busted Open. And I'm not going to be seeing my pal Mark Henry in AEW for a bit. I got to catch up with him in Huntsville and such a fun guy, such a nice human being. I know he's probably going to be hitting the circuit here, there, and yon. And there's a Busted Open event, or there is an opportunity to meet him at, you know, a WrestleCade or a WrestleCon or star cast or whatever, go out of your way to meet Mark Henry. Not only will you get a great picture and a great autograph, but you might come away with a fun story too.
Yeah, fun guy. And not only that, he knows a lot about cooking. Do you know that?
Yeah, he's told me that, you know, he's like a low-key chef.
Right. Yes, he is. He and I have talked about food a lot. And is this before that Road Dogg and...
No, this is after. So DX, after, if you, okay. You just saw Triple H out there with the titties out. He's okay. Part of the ministry along with DX. So DX is not DX, but China. But you know, they've sort of all gone their own separate ways here.
Okay.
And that's what's crazy when you think about it is how hot they got. But really, in the scheme of things, what a short run it was.
Yeah, apparently it was a short run. It was just a couple of years, right? A
couple of years, and they were on top, and then. You know, they tried to make them single stars, and they're actually going to start him on like a. This is Beaver Cleavage right here, Tony. You used to see him, real life Chaz Warrington, one half of the headbanger, and that is, that's his mommy. And there's lots of double entendres here. Like in one skit, he would skin his knee. His mom is going to take care of it. He looks right at the camera and says, "Nobody works harder on their knees than my mom."
That's, oh, got it.
That sort.
Got it. Okay. So now Vince has...
Stooges, yeah.
Okay, those are the Stooges, and he's gotten dressed because he's going to get in the ring, apparently.
Yes, he's going to be wrestling against either The Undertaker, Stone Cold later. I think it's The Undertaker. Hey, and check this out. Does this look reminiscent? You've seen something like this before? The stage is ablaze. And up through the elevator on the stage, here comes a member of the Brood. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Christian with long hair going with the puffy shirt from Seinfeld rather than the turtleneck.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that Brood entrance that we got from Adam Copeland? I mean, it was the most rock and roll entrance I recall. One of the cooler things. And then, of course, we got a fun moment. With the return of Gangrel, we even got to call it Gangrel and call it the Brood. The only thing that was missing, perhaps one of the best theme songs of all time, the Brood theme song. We can't play it here, Tony. WWE will send us yet another cease and desist. But have you heard the Brood theme song?
I have not. As a matter of fact, as you might imagine from what we were talking about earlier, I was not familiar with the Brood at all. So all of that was lost on me. Were you fans who have watched The Brood and were familiar with it back in the day? It was not lost on you, but it was lost on me. But I thought, other than that, it was a very cool entrance. When I saw The Brood come up on the screen, I'm thinking, oh, I get it. That's a callback.
Yes.
To the Brood, but I didn't know at that time. So, oh, look at this. They're coming in black and white.
A black and white effect.
Yeah.
Course, how about that? What's old is new again. Maybe we've seen some of that in recent years. But yeah, this is maybe one of the more wrestle crap gimmicks of all time. Pretending to be a kid, not a kid. And it's all an excuse to get a lady, scantily clad lady out there, a good looking lady out there with him. Because, well, in Vince Russo's WWF, that's ratings, bro.
Yeah, who was the girl?
I think I could be mistaken on this. I thought that was BB or Barbara Bush, but I might be. Maybe that's worth a Google.
All right. Harry Beaver Cleavage. Got it.
You like that?
Yeah. JR is raw. Love that sign they put up there. JR, of course, couldn't join us. I did a shout out on TV to him. I hope everybody heard that. And he's had a bout with the flu. Couldn't travel. Hopefully he'll be back with us very, very soon.
By the way, I totally butchered that. That was not Barbara Bush. That is not BB. That is Mariana Kamlos. She was born September 3rd, 1969. Wow. Unfortunately, she passed away in 2004 at just 35 years old in Vancouver, Canada.
Oh, my God.
We would see her use the names Mariana and Mrs. Cleavage. I guess she was actually married to Paul Lazenby, who I think once upon a time stunt double for Stone Cold Steve Austin. I can't believe that breast cancer got her at just 35 years old, man. She's been gone almost 20 years. Isn't that wild?
Horrible. I don't even recognize Christian, to be honest with you here.
No, why would you? How could you?
God.
I mean, look at who the referee is. That's old Peanut Head.
Yeah, I know. Wow.
By the way, we want to give a quick shout out to everybody who's riding shotgun with us. I know you shouted out Brooke and Eric and Phil, but Lindsay's here and Aaron's here and Coach Keith is here and Coach Rosie's here. Anthony's here. Adam is in the house. Appreciate all you guys hanging out.
Yeah.
Coach Rosie was actually our live correspondent when we did some post double or nothing coverage. He was there in the building. It was quite an atmosphere for that pay-per-view, Tony.
It really was. Coach Rosie said he just lost his dog Boots while he was in Vegas. Holy smokes. We are sorry, Coach Rosie.
His wife elected to tell him once he got home. Didn't want to ruin his trip and have him think about this while he was at the wrestling show. But yeah, man, we love our dogs here on the program, and the idea that somebody's gone way too soon in our little wrestling family here, that just sucks.
Also, Coach Keith is with us, and Coach, I know you're a big Raiders fan, and I had a chance to Uber by the stadium during the day, and the stadium is spectacular. And I guess that's where they're going to have WrestleMania, right? Next year?
Yep.
Yeah,
it's on Easter, Tony. Next year, it's on Easter.
Yeah. So the Allegiant Stadium is just spectacular. So, and now they're going to build a baseball park, and they're going to steal my Oakland A's. We had kind of a great crowd. Great crowd, but it was kind of a surly crowd at times.
How do you mean?
Surly may be wrong. There were, you know, some people booing the baby faces.
Oh, I see.
See? Okay, maybe a more heelish crowd than I'm used to.
Heel crowd.
Yeah, right. And I guess that's when you have pay-per-views, you know, you get a slice of wrestling fans from all over, right? Having a pay-per-view in Las Vegas, if you're a wrestling fan, is kind of like a destination, right? A destination location. Go and have a pay-per-view.
So how about that? That was Michael Hayes, as we know him here on the program, Doot. He is the manager and I guess the mentor for the Hardy Boys. Uh-huh. So he's got the skin tight shirt and the big black jeans. And yeah, he's going to come down and whack Christian in the head with a stick. Of course, it's all about Edge and Christian and the Brood, Gangrel, taking on these guys. But this is really going to be Michael Hayes' last moment as an active member in the wrestling business. He would actually do a six-man, but he would have some physicality here. This is years after we had seen Michael Hayes, because he's been known as Doc Hendricks here for a long time.
Right.
So for him to have this opportunity is really interesting. And of course, at the time, everybody was saying, oh, how old he is and this and that. But he was not old. You know, it's weird how
he's just been around a long time.
Yeah. We all sort of just assume, but the reality is, I mean, the dude had just turned 40.
Right. And there's Gangrel too, as well.
Gang's all here, man.
Yeah. So this is after the Edge and Christian Hardy Boys great run in with a ladder match and everything, isn't it?
No, it's before.
It's before. Okay.
They're going to make themselves household names with No Mercy, which would be in October of this year. They're all still trying to cut their teeth and establish themselves and get over. And now we've got a shot in the back with The Undertaker having a conversation with Shane McMahon.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, but this shot just tickles me. Because, I don't know, it just makes me laugh.
Yeah, the dead man and the son, I guess.
I mean, he's there. I mean, Shane is dressed like business casual, and here The Undertaker is, just sleeves of tattoos and all black and like NFL lineman gloves, and they're having this conversation in the back, and the camera's just right in their face. And speaking of writing in their face, there he is, the greatest wrestler of all time. People are going to come around eventually. Double J, Jeff Jarrett, with Deborah in tow.
Yeah.
He was the former running mate with Owen, and he's talked about how he really didn't have a chance to deal with all of this with Owen. And he was just right back on the road.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine how challenging that had to be for everyone.
Yeah, Mark Henry was another very good friend of Owen's too.
Yeah.
And he had to deal with that. We've talked to Mark about talked with Mark about that on a, I think during the StarCast on a panel. I was on that panel asking the question. And and here comes the Godfather.
Pimpin' ain't easy, Tony.
Yes.
By the way, when I think of the Godfather, I think about our friends at Blue Chew.
Oh. You know what?
What?
Son of a bitch.
What?
We've got, and I'm sure it's because I'm on this podcast and I work for the competitor, but we've got to be able to get the sound back on this podcast for these watch along.
WWE does not want us telling people to go to the Peacock Network. They do not want to serve their partners at NBC Universal. They're not interested in that. They want to get all the money they can get from those guys and hope that every year less and less people watch it, and then they get to go fish for a new deal. They're not interested in trying to grow and us direct traffic there and encourage people to sign up at Peacock. Ah-ah! They don't want that.
Yeah, but you know what? We've got on this network, we got one of the highest ranking executives that can get that done for us.
No, he can't. Good before. See, this is a new WWE.
Okay, I see.
Like once upon a time, we didn't have any issues at all. Because the reason Vince hired Bruce back, it's because all of a sudden the folks over at the WWE Network, when they first launched it, they were like, hey, why all of a sudden are people watching this random old pay-per-view that we're not talking about, we're not promoting, it's not an anniversary. It was the power of something to wrestle. So they came calling. We did a show for them on the network. They were thrilled. They were so happy with Bruce. He's making more money than ever now. But the person who made all those decisions, I don't know if you've heard this, but he's not there anymore. And well, it's a new legal outfit who's helping, and
so you just chalk it up to idiot lawyers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're thinking we're trying to monetize their IP for ourselves, but the reality is we're trying to get people to go watch the stuff because there is a treasure trove of great content that the WWE owns that they don't promote and they don't talk about, and so as a result, no one watches it. I mean, I've been on some of their internal calls years ago at this point now, back when somebody else was still there, and it was said over and over and over, hey, people only watch the premium live events and the new current stuff. They don't watch the old stuff. And that disappointed me, Tony, because you and I had such a great time watching all the 1986 Jim Crockett promotion.
Right.
And I know for a fact we got a lot of people to watch that, and now they're back in and they're watching current stuff. WWE doesn't believe that. They don't buy that. They don't think that nostalgia is a way to introduce. And even if they do, I guess they just want to own it all, which is fine. We're not trying to own it. But hey, if we're letting you hear some of what's going on in 1986 and we say, by the way, all of 85 and 87, and it's all here, you would think that would be a formula that would work, you know, because it has. But that's old management. New management says, no thanks.
Okay, well, you know, I've always believed this about lawyers. There's a definite line in lawyers, right down the middle.
Yeah.
You're either really, really smart and really good or really fucking stupid. There's no in between. And I'll leave it at that.
Speaking of stupid, Coach Rosie, friend of the show, says, where were you Saturday night after a collision? Because I was sitting at Sapphire's by myself having to talk to Disco waiting.
Okay, well, here's exactly where I was, Coach. First of all, I would not go anywhere near Disco Inferno. Nowhere near. That's number one. Even if I were drunk and someone said, hey, you want to go see disco? And normally a drunk person will go, yeah, I'll go, fuck no. Here's, I'm going to lay it out. This is the type of person that I am. And this is boring as shit. And you know how I am, Conrad. Boring as shit. Okay. Takes a lot for me to do something. I went back to the hotel, and my hotel was out at the airport, on the other side of the airport. It wasn't even near the strip. Didn't even have in the lobby slot machine. I stayed at this hotel, and I had to do some signings for Upper Deck that I wasn't able to do during the day. And I took about 3 hours and did the signing in my hotel room that night and went to bed. And was able to get a good night's sleep. Here is what I did between Bakersfield and Las Vegas. When everybody else ran to Las Vegas after Bakersfield, I stayed in LA for 2 days, Thursday and Friday. And what I did was, both days, got these real nice walking shoes. And I walked the beach between Santa Monica and Venice Beach, 4 miles each day. And then stayed in the hotel by myself, did some work. We had to do some voiceover work, some voiceover, as we call them, punches for the control center. And flew in Saturday morning, went right to the building and did the collision and came right back to the hotel and did the signing like that. So that's me, just by myself. I don't hang with the crowd, and that's pretty fucking boring, isn't it?
Have you been to Sapphires before?
No. So you're saying I missed something? Is that top of the line? Is that, as far as strip clubs go, would that be like one of the best?
It's up there.
Okay.
It's up there. Yeah,
Yeah, but they hired this goof. How good could they be?
Well, listen, are you telling me there's no goofs under the employ of Tony Khan and AEW? I bet I could name a few running around if I really had to.
And you would be right on.
I saw something at Sapphires once I've never seen.
Okay.
A power bomb through a glass table.
Really?
Yeah.
Hopefully it was by a bouncer.
Nope.
Oh my God.
There was a lady doing a lap dance, as they do. And there was a glass coffee table in front. And then another lady came over and they were trying to do some sort of Three Stooges routine. You know how there's a high spot and everybody's on the top rope at the same time. And then maybe one person loses their balance, that causes another person to lose their balance, and down goes Frazier.
Yes.
Well, it looked as if this guy had like a powerbomb type position set up.
Uh-huh.
And then she just fucking jackknifed right through that glass table. Oh, and God. I immediately said, everyone else I was there to watch the Super Bowl with, it's time to go right now. Let's get our tab. Let's pay. Let's leave. Yeah. I'm not sure what happened, but there's about to be paperwork involved, and I don't want there to be a record that I was even here. Now, of course, I'm telling the story on podcast, but I've never seen someone get powerbombed through a glass coffee table before.
No.
And in fairness, she rode Warrior Hawked. She just hopped right up. I don't know if she was hopped up on something or maybe thought, hey, I'm going to get in trouble for this, or I'm an entertainer. I got to act like that didn't hurt. But I mean, she had glass in her hair. It was wild.
Wow. Well, there you go. We'll blame Disco Inferno.
I'm down with blaming Disco Inferno. By the way, Coach Rosie tells us that he actually went to Nigel McGuinness's magic show.
Right.
And I don't know how successful that was, because I have it on good authority that what Nigel's dream trick is to make Brian Danielson disappear.
We did, of course, we did last week, Nigel and Brian's matches. And I, talked to both of them extensively about those.
What'd they say? And,
well, Nigel, of course, just loves the adulation, right? Just, oh yeah, thank you so much. And Brian tells me, and Brian's right, I think, that he feels that Nigel, had it not been for his health problems,
yeah,
his injury problems, would have been a major star.
I agree.
Yeah. And again, I was unfamiliar with the past. And again, if you've not watched, and I guess it's on ROH Honor Club, if you've not watched any Brian Danielson, Nigel McGuinness matches, it's, you love pro wrestling, it behooves you to watch that stuff. So, anyway, so I said something to Nigel. I said, you know, probably should get you on the podcast. He says, if you show up to one of my magic shows, then I'll do your podcast. So there you go. And Coach Rosie went to it. He said it was great. He's done some card tricks to me before, right? Like guess the card type thing.
Oh, yeah.
They're spectacular. Just, it's like, what the fuck? How did you do that type thing? Right. So, and I guess he can hypnotize people. So, Nigel McGuinness, hey, man, I love working with him. I hope people like us working together because I certainly do love working with him. Great heel announcer.
We just saw Vince McMahon wrestle The Undertaker. And of course, wow, at one point, he's going to swat, he being Undertaker, pronouns pal, Mike Chioda, who's going to take quite a bump. So Vince is going to get the win. Technically, Vince beat The Undertaker on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
Of course, there's his stooges, Mr. Jerry Briscoe and Pat Patterson. Michael Cole in the back now, getting a word from Stone Cold. I should mention that, boy, there's so much going on here. You know, I think that this show actually happened the day of the Owen Hart funeral. And as the story goes, they sent a big bouquet of flowers, and it was a big heart with Owen Hart on it, had the WWF on the side. I guess his wife Martha was so disgusted with the WWF logo that she had them get rid of it. Mm. And she said that the idea that they showed any footage from any of this, quote, I feel exploited and violated by it. I was completely repulsed by it. Mm. I said it because I dislike their show, and airing the footage is self-serving. Not only did they disrespect me, they didn't care. The WWF should be totally denounced for what they did. Owen was not a tacky, sleazy wrestler, and I don't want the footage aired on a WWF show. And of course, you know, this is going to be the beginning of a really ugly lawsuit. And I understand. And I'm glad that after, you know, she's really been separated from the pro wrestling business as long as she has, we got a really cool announcement about the Owen.
Mm-hmm.
And that now the winners on the, both the men's side and the women's side, they're going to get title shots at Wembley Stadium. That's big news, man. The Owen.
I think that's big news, and let me suck up to the boss here. I think that's great booking, to be honest with you. It makes the Owen mean more, and it adds a little intrigue to what's going to happen at Wembley. So I like all of it, and not only that, I love going to Calgary. Gosh, Calgary is such a great city. Holy smokes. You haven't been to Calgary. And we go, of course, we go at a great time, right, during the Stampede. But if you haven't been to Calgary, you don't know what you're missing. Just great stuff. And so we look forward to it. Martha has been so great. And let's hear it for Tony, I think, honoring Owen the right way. And so there you go. Coach Rosie says, if it wasn't for you, me, Tony, I don't think Nigel would have brought me on stage. Wow. Pretty cool.
I was hoping he could have made Coach Rosie disappear.
I was thinking the same. Didn't happen. I was thinking the same. Well, here's Cactus Jack, Mankind, or that, whomever.
That'll put some butts in the seats.
Ba-dum-tsh-tsh.
Hey, this is the same week, by the way back when, where the real life Rena Mero, now Brock Lesnar's wife, the former wife of Mark Mero, we knew her as Sable here in the WWF, filed a lawsuit against the parent organization, the World Wrestling Federation, Titan Sports. She's suing for $140 million.
What did they settle on anything that was made public?
They did settle. She would come back. It'd be like, I think, 04,
right?
Maybe 03. Yeah, it was like 4 years before she was back. Do you remember her showing up at Nitro? She was in the crowd, if you recall.
Yeah, you mean just as Mark Mero's wife, not as Sable or as Sable?
Well, you couldn't call her Sable. They own that name.
Right.
But I think you guys showed her like sitting in the crowd a couple weeks after this, maybe.
Okay.
June 14th, 1999.
I don't remember that. I remember her being around before she became a star.
Right.
Before she was just. Just when she was Johnny B. Badd's wife. And I remember thinking when I saw her later in the later years that because she was backstage with Johnny and she was, I guess, shy and didn't talk much and really was just kind of standoffish.
Hmm.
And I remember thinking, wow, she really, her personality really came out through all of this. I guess it was always there, but really came out. So now they're showing a clip from Warzone. Now this is the same night that Owen died, right? Warzone? Was it?
So you've got two shows.
Okay.
So the whole thing is called Monday Night Raw. But you've got Raw is War. And yes. Then Warzone. So we got wanted it. To have two shows in the top 20 or whatever. So we're going to pretend like they're separate shows, but we all know it's the same.
Right, I got it now. So now they're doing a boss man angle with Mick Foley. And what can we say about Mick Foley at this time? Winning the world title?
Oh, yeah. That was at the very beginning of the year.
Okay.
So that would have happened in late December, and it aired the day of the Finger Poke of Doom.
Yeah.
So January of 99.
Yeah.
Yeah, January 4th.
And that's where the big comment was, right?
That's the big comment. Yes, sir. So. Yeah. 600,000 people changed the channel, never came back, and WWE just continues to pull further and further away. I mean, they're hitting a 6.8 main event tonight.
Wow. I don't think you're ever going to see those numbers again, because 6.8 kind of works out to like 6.8.
Oh, no, it's almost 10 million people.
Almost 10 million people.
By the way, look at the crowd go nuts for Road Dogg. I know when Road Dogg was doing his podcast and he would say, I'm a better sports entertainer than this guy or that guy. Boy, it would get everybody all up in arms. He was always careful to use that exact wording, though. He's not pretending for a minute that he was a better technical wrestler than any of those names.
Yeah.
But like when he was going to give an elbow, he starts doing a dance and shimmying around and the crowd went bananas.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what he was, obviously he was trolling for engagement and good for him. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, he was a pretty damn over sports entertainer. And I don't think it's all that unlike, you know, a couple of years ago, man, the Acclaimed were one of the hottest acts in all of wrestling. They were getting monster pops. And a lot of that wasn't because of what happened in the ring. It was because they just liked the rap on the way to the ring and the gimmick.
And the scissor.
The scissor.
Yeah.
So
right.
Road Dogg would do his rap to the ring, and then everybody's doing the suck it and blah, blah, blah. It's very similar. And of course, the connective tissue there is Billy Gunn.
Right. Well, you know, when I look at Road Dogg, I look at another talent that was completely miscast in AEW, right? I mean, it took, like The Undertaker, it took Road Dogg to go to the WWE to become a star. They knew how to make stars back then. We did not.
Yeah, you said AEW, but you meant WCW.
WCW, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think there was a discussion once upon a time, I think, about Road Dogg and AEW. It just didn't happen. And we know now he's back with WWE and probably working way too much and traveling way too much, if I had to guess. And I can't help but wonder how much fun a guy like Big Boss Man would be having today. Can you imagine what a big hit he would have been at these conventions, the nostalgia shows?
Yeah.
Like, think about how many, you know, magazine covers and action figures and 8x10s. I mean, he would have enjoyed working that circuit a great deal, because I think now, with the benefit of hindsight, people can appreciate just how talented of an in-ring performer he was. I mean, a big bump and heel, a big man who could really move.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Shane is throwing a fit backstage. I'm sure fits were thrown backstage in reality. I'm not so sure Shane did. Well,
here's our King of the Ring graphic. Here's a little spoiler. It's going to get down to Mr. Ass at the very end. So this is we're beginning the singles push. You know, anytime a successful tag team breaks up like that, there's always going to be the question and the debate. Hey, who's going to break out and be the Shawn Michaels? Who's going to be unfortunately, the Marty Jannetty? I saw this great gimmick the other day that said, hey, what if in an alternate universe, after they split, it was Shawn Michaels who got super kicked through the barbershop window, and it was Marty Jannetty who pursued his boyhood dream, and Marty Jannetty who was a part of DX. Now, of course, we know that didn't happen, and it worked out the way it was supposed to. It is interesting to think if that would have even allowed Shawn Michaels to maybe be a part of the jump that Kevin Nash and Scott Hall did down to WCW. Shawn Michaels and the NWO, that could have been crazy, right?
That would have been crazy. Think about that.
Right?
Holy smokes. Yeah, it would have been wouldn't have been a bad jump for him, because, you know, once we went out of business, he could have made the jump right back. I was thinking now, Dave, I don't know if you can show that graphic again of the King of the Ring bracket, but even if you can't, there it is. Thank you. Take a look at the legendary performers on this one, right?
Mr. Ass, Viscera, Shamrock, right. Jarrett, Big Show, Draws, Test, Kane, Road Dogg, Godfather, China, Val Venus, Al Snow, Bob Holly, Boss Man, X-Pac. A lot of talent there. I'm curious, how many are no longer with us? So we know Viscera's gone.
China's gone.
Test is gone. China's gone.
Right.
Boss Man's gone. Damn, five of those guys.
Yeah.
No longer with us.
China versus Val Venus would have been an interesting matchup to watch.
We could make that happen. We have the technology. Yeah.
We have the technology.
We just can't play the audio.
Something's wrong with that.
It's all silly. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Hey, by the way, and we saw him interview, I guess, Stone Cold in the back. Shout out to Michael Cole for his longevity and being an announcer in this. Just, you know, I know he's, as if you've been around for a long time, it will get tired of listening to you. As you do. So I know he's had his detractors, but man, can't deny what he has been to this business. I mean, he's along with JR been the soundtrack of the WWE, right? Just absolutely tremendous. And I have not talked to Michael since the days when I was looking for a job back in the early 2000s. But wow. Tremendous performer. Wrestling is better with him in it. Here's a man who's a fucking badass. You see X-Pac do all of his shit, and Ron's like, I don't. Boom.
What a unbelievable performer Ron Simmons is. And I know that timing is everything, and the timing working out for him the way it did. He became the first African-American world champion. That was cool.
Yeah.
And I can't help but wonder, like, that dude would be so over today. You know what I mean? Like,
oh my God.
I could totally see him being an even bigger star today. You know, if you could take Ron Simmons from, call it 1992, and drop him off in 2024, my goodness, what a megastar he would
be. Look at JBL. I mean, I don't know if those are working punches, but they look pretty damn good. And I never did get it. And he's doing it here, I guess, wrestling with earrings on.
Man, seems tricky, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? I mean, you could just get those things by accident ripped out of your ears. Just somebody, you know, just glancing blow or something like that, or you're on the mat. But man, he's either really laying them in or he's got some tremendous working punches here.
Of course, we're talking about the mayor in there working with JBL.
Yeah.
We got a great question from Coach Rosie. No, okay. I know you're not a huge baseball guy, but there was some big baseball news I should bring up.
Right.
Coach Rosie says baseball umpire Angel Hernandez has retired. Uh-huh. What did you think of Angel Hernandez as an umpire?
Well, I think he is going to go down as one of the worst umpires ever in baseball. So congratulations to Angel. If that's what you wanted to be, that's what you've become. And he's been very combative as an umpire. And Angel Hernandez obviously trained to be an umpire, but Angel Hernandez did something that no one should ever do. And that is he attempted to become bigger than the game itself. He attempted to become, with controversial calls, he attempted to have the attention put on him. And that's not what an umpire should do. So he's going to go down and, as one of the worst baseball umpires in the world, and don't let the door hit you in the ass.
Well, I for one think that again, I'm in the minority, I'm sure.
Huh?
Wouldn't it be great if we did a pro wrestling angle with Angel Hernandez?
Who knows?
He's known to be a referee who gets the calls wrong. Lean into that, make yourself a character.
Right.
Like if I was his agent, I'd get him on a podcast. I'd have a book deal. We'd have a YouTube show and I would start farming him out for commercial appearances wherever you need someone to, in canon, make the wrong call.
Right.
He's always involved, but imagine him involved in pro wrestling or you know what? The next big, I guess, pop culture thing. Let him be one of the judges for Mike Tyson and Jake Paul. You know, this is stupid, but lean into it, man. Have some fun.
His ego would not let him do that. He believed that he was, you know, I always thought guys in like Angel Hernandez made the wrong call just to put attention on themselves. They wanted to be combative. They wanted their names out there. And they also, in their mind, thought they were making the right call. And those stupid son of a bitches weren't. So, anyway, see you later. And there's a lot more. There's a lot more things about baseball that I hate. I was looking it up. I've been looking up his name, and I guess he's going to go down as the worst baseball umpire ever, right?
I mean, that's what everybody's saying. Certainly that's been the conversation on social media.
Yeah.
The Acolytes are retaining their tag straps here against Kane and X-Pac. What did you think of the Kane-X-Pac pairing? That's a fun little tag team, is it not?
Yeah, that is. That's very interesting. They would do something like that. Of course, you know, it's a great big guy, little guy that can move. Why not? There was another umpire, I guess he's still out there. It's terrible too. And that's CB Buckner. I think CB and Angel are different in many ways in that Angel knew what he was doing, seeking attention and made bad calls just to get attention. CB Buckner to me was just kind of clueless. Thinking he was making the right call was just stupid. Of course, again, I've been out of the game for a number of years now, so who am I to comment?
Hey, so take a look at this hidden camera thing. It's GTV. The idea, I guess, is this was always going to be revealed that it was Goldust setting up these cameras. And we would catch, like, little things maybe we weren't supposed to catch, including D'Lo Brown coming in, taking a look, saying, "Lord have mercy, what's happening there? Boy, does that smell bad." It's Mark Henry.
Okay.
I mean, we've got beaver cleavage. We've got toilet humor.
Mark Henry taking a shit.
An old country shit, boy.
An old country shit.
Hey, we got a fun question here from Jim in Buffalo. He wants to know, okay. I guess he's noticed that my background looks a little different today. And he says, yeah. Tony, what are you going to miss the most about the Con Radisson? Please answer Albert. Not going, no matter how many times I was invited. But he was there, by God. He came to
the show. Yeah, but you know what? I hadn't been to the Con Radisson in years, but Lois going there, we went there on Super Bowl Sunday one time. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And Lois kind of, Big Booty Judy showing Lois the
Peach Moonshine.
Peach moonshine that almost killed Lois. I told you that story. She said, doctor says my liver counts are up. I said, really? Maybe it's because you're drinking a fucking case of moonshine every week. I think what I'm going to miss most about it is almost dying in the basement.
I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't either, but it'd been a story, right? It was, and Conrad, you're too credited. It was the most welcoming place I've ever been in my life.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks for that, man.
You just felt welcome there. You really did. Thank you for that. And so now I'm going to go to your new house and watch as a flock of geese stick their beak up your ass and run you out into the water.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, you had asked me before on the show, hey, what's going on with the geese? Because I did have some stuck in the boathouse, but they're not there anymore. And
right.
I don't know, for like 20 times in a row, I'd been over, I hadn't seen any geese. But now that I'm here all the time, anytime I see a big mass gathering of the geese, you get a picture or a video. It's become something you and I trade back and forth at least once a week, something crazy that we saw a goose do.
Yeah. You sent me it was like a bunch of them, right? Rallying out at the lake in front of your house. And I think I said, here they come. They're rallying the troops. You're fucked. They're after you. So who is the, okay. And I should know, but fuck it. With Val Venus here, who's the girl on the outside?
That is Dave Silva's wife, Heather Silva. She's 6'9" old or tall, 6'9" years old. She's 6'9" old. Yeah. She can bench press me and Dave, one in each hand. No, that's Nicole Bass. But she's much taller than everyone else, which is always what makes me laugh about Dave and Heather because, Heather's Dave's favorite tree to climb. Them together is quite a visual.
All right. Yeah.
It's like, you know, you've seen like your bars on your cell phone to show your signal strength. Brother is maybe the smallest bar, then Dave, then sister, and then mom. Dave Silva, the original short king of adfreeshows.com. No, that's Nicole Bass. She had been a regular part of Howard Stern's Whack Pack. She was a very successful lady bodybuilder, and she just had this phenomenal look. I mean, she's jacked up. And what had worked before, and not that distant of a memory, hey, let's have a female bodyguard in China. Well, now we're sort of doing it again with Nicole Bass. And no disrespect to Nicole. She's no longer with us. She passed away way too young. But she, too, was not quite the performer China became. But still, what an imposing presence, right?
You're not kidding, man. You are not kidding. When she walked out, I'm thinking, wow.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I'm very sorry. Oh, Russian Leg Sweep by Val Venus. This is Ken Shamrock, right?
Yeah, so it's Val Venus and Ken Shamrock here. Our referee is Mr. Timmy White. And coming down to the ring, it's Deborah, Miss Deborah, the women's champion and the intercontinental champion, or as I call him, the assistant manager of WWE, Mr. Double J, Jeff Jarrett, in his Don't Piss Me Off era. Hey, this is actually, believe it or not, Tony, brought up the third man on our show here, the man behind the scenes, the Wizard of Oz, the secret sauce of what we do, Mr. Dave Silva. This is actually our last What Happened When with Dave Silva being an Alabama resident. His Rugrats are getting out of school. I think they had their last day last weekend. And I think the movers are coming in town tomorrow. And so for the next few days, they'll be loading up, headed to San Antonio, Texas. I'm getting him closer and closer to back to his native land. And headed to San Antonio, going to be right across the street from his in-laws, Tony. And he's excited about that. And I'm thinking,
wow,
I don't know if that's going to work out the way you think it will, but I hope it does.
Yeah. Well, I hope it does too. I would not mind at all having some of our kids live across the street from us, because that would be instant dog sitters. And for Dave, he and Heather can go do some things now, I guess, maybe.
Well, the kids are, I mean, I said they were finishing school, right?
Right. Right.
I mean, they're seniors in high school next.
Both of them are?
Yeah. They're twins. And typically they graduate around the same time.
I didn't know they were twins.
Yeah.
I did not. Wow.
My favorite is when a stupid person hears that there's a brother, sister, twin set, and somebody goes, are they identical? Did you hear the part where one's a boy and one's a girl? No, listen, we love the Silvas. It's going to be weird. You know, Heather is like my wife's best friend. And I think they're both already like, I'm going to miss her. And meanwhile, Dave and I have been in the same town, and we've seen each other about the same amount of times as I've seen you in person. So, you know, it's like, hey, man, see you on Zoom. Safe travels.
Well, they loaded up the truck and they moved to Beverly.
It is going to be interesting, though, to see how long it takes Dave's Huntsville neighborhood Whataburger to start laying people off, because it can't be far behind. Like I was in the line for that Whataburger. I've only been through that line one time, and I was one car behind Heather, and I heard the lady in the window say the usual. They just had it ready, like, bam, out the window.
Yeah,
they know what Dave likes, and do you know what Dave likes? He likes putting mayonnaise on the outside of the bun. Not the inside. He wants the mayonnaise all over his fingers, which I think is fucking gross.
You're bullshitting me, right?
No, he wants like mayo fingers. That's his thing. So I'm not talking about on the inside of the bun where the meat and the gimmicks are on the outside.
Okay, Dave, get on here.
It's 100% true. He's going to deny it, but I know I'll get a photo when I never see him again.
Defend yourself.
Defend myself. If you put it on the outside, it's like you're eating a cloud because it's all white. So it's really like negative calories.
Okay, great, Dave. Now, see you later. The fuck? Wait a minute. No, don't go anywhere. You're so full of shit.
What?
This is a true story, right?
They throw like 36 napkins in the bag.
So you're
prepared. I put one right here.
Uh-huh.
And then I wipe my cloud.
Yeah.
And I eat it all up, and then wipe, clean.
Mayonnaise on the outside.
Oh, but was this handed down in your family, or are you the originator of this?
I remember under the Christmas tree on my when I was 7 years old, I got one of those little glass. Remember when they used to do the mayonnaise in little glass where you would, I got that under the tree and a couple of stocking stuffers, condiments.
Okay.
Condiments usage has been in my family for decades, and we go hard. We go hard on the condiment. It's delicious. Try it.
I will. Dave, yeah. Good luck on the move back.
Vaya con Dios, my amigo. Vaya con Dios.
I don't know what that means, but thanks to our friends at Babbel, figure it out. Hey,
under the tree was it
a little jar of mayonnaise?
Yeah, travel size mayonnaise. Oh,
that's hard times, Daddy.
Oh man, I've got to have some sort of sound effect for that. Let me see what I can find here. There you go.
Oh, God damn. This is gross. Let's do a few questions from our live studio audiences. We're watching a pretty wild match here. China is at ringside. Mike Chioda is the referee. But Triple H is looking as good as he ever did, man. Taking on Mick Foley. Great rivalry they're going to have. Jim in Buffalo says, hypothetically, if for any reason you departed WCW during the heyday of the Monday Night Wars, would you have been invested in the Attitude Era? Does watching it back change perspectives? So we know that, you know, you really weren't focusing on what the WWF was doing. You were all in on WCW. Yeah. But do you think in an alternate universe, you could have gotten into this Attitude Era style of presentation, or is this just too different for you to really?
No, I would, the question, though, that I want to know here is, are they talking about me as an employee of WWE?
Yes, just like if you would have jumped ship.
Oh, yeah, I would have been invested in it. It's kind of like today. You have to get invested into what's going on. I think you have to change with the times. What we see today, we would have never seen when I first started, right?
Right.
Catching a guy on fire, hanging a guy upside down, thumbtacks. Tope suicidas, guys going through plate glasses, all that stuff. We would have never seen it back then. But I think you have to change with it, and I think you have to adapt to it, and I think you have to appreciate it. I would have. Does watching it change perspective? No, I don't think so. I think if I would have watched it back then, I would have enjoyed it. So, yeah, good question, though. We just saw Triple H hit Mick with that sledgehammer in the knee. I can tell you, though, back to that question, had I been out of the wrestling business and had just left WCW like I did, I wouldn't have watched it. As you know, I was out for 18 years. And
why didn't you watch, Tony? Was it just to hurt your feelings?
No, I try to move forward in my life. I've always been that way. I don't watch baseball now. I very rarely watch the Georgia Bulldogs. I watch some NFL games, but I feel that if I'm not a part of the business, I don't enjoy it. If I'm not covering a baseball game, I don't enjoy it as just being a fan. I don't know. Maybe it's, I just move on. That was part of my life. Boom, gone, move on. I was a big, big college basketball fan and loved the Georgia Bulldogs and loved working for them. I don't watch college basketball at all. Boom, move on. I'm weird that way. Kind of like same way I'm weird about staying to myself and alone when I'm on the road. Just a weird guy, as you know. And as you know, not a good friend.
Coach Keith has a fun question. He says, hey, I hope I can ask this question. Conrad and David Crockett talked about the first Crockett Cup and how crazy that weekend was. Did you feel the same way, Tony? Of course, he's referencing this because Mr. Crockett and I visit every month for adfreeshows.com, and we do a program called The Book where we go through his brother Jimmy's Red Books, where those are like the booking sheets from way back when. What's the house? How many tickets were sold? What towns? What dates? What matches? And then we try to add some context for what's happening on TV. But when we talked about the Crockett Cup and how you had all these different promotions and all these different wrestlers from all over the world, that the Superdome, you got an afternoon show, you got an evening show. And there's a moment where Bruce Prichard, who's acting as ring announcer, he's actually in the same ring with yourself and Jim Ross. Who would have thought years later, those three guys would be doing podcasts together. What a crazy world that is. What do you remember of that first Crockett Cup in New Orleans?
It was my first time in New Orleans. So I was really excited about being in New Orleans. I remember walking down Bourbon Street with Jim Crockett. I may have told this story here. And there was a yellow shirt, T-shirt in a window. And it said, "No more Mr. Nice Guys, on your knees, bitch." And Jim Crockett says, "I'm going to buy that for you." And he did. Okay. Because I was just a kid and, you know, had not been in the wrestling business that long. And I took it home and hid it from Lois. I don't know what happened to it, but that's what I remember. I remember being on Bourbon Street the first time and eating and drinking with Dusty and I just remember being a fun time. And also remember what I remember about it was seeing some guys that I had only read about, like Tiger Mask, Giant Baba, they were there. First time I think I'd mentioned Dutch Mantel. There were just guys from other territories there, which I thought was very cool. I thought it was a great experience. And really, when I go back and think about my time at Jim Crockett, it was one of the best experiences that I had. The house wasn't that good, but to me, that didn't matter. That was just being in the Superdome and seeing all these guys I've never seen before and being in New Orleans for the first time. A very memorable, very cool experience in my career.
It's time for our main event here. It's Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker. This is going to do quite business on the ratings. And you see that The Undertaker is wearing the Smoking Skull Championship. It was a world title created especially for Stone Cold Steve Austin. It's reminiscent to me of the $1 million title. We know years later, John Cena would introduce a spinning championship belt. What do you think of the wrestler-specific stylized championships?
I'm not really for it. I think the championship should represent the company and not the person. So that's my feeling on that. I think it's kind of hilarious in the scheme of what we're doing right now that Chris Jericho would put his name on that FTW belt. I'm telling you, Chris Jericho has done it again, man. Don't you think? He's come up with just a different angle to do things, and this disingenuous smiling type thing is, I love it.
I think it's working too. Like, you know, my friend and I were having a lot of fun talking about how, you know, he's become self-aware and just leaning into it and really turning the volume up. But I do think as much heat as he's got with certain section of fans who are just like, hey, please retire, please go away. Here's the reality, in my opinion. You take Jericho off TV for a handful of months, and when he pops back up, it's a hero's welcome.
Yeah. Like
maybe if anything, it's because he's been on television too consistently. I think it was once said, how can I miss you if you never go away?
Right.
And if he was, let's say for instance, you know, he finished up at Double or Nothing and we don't see him again until he makes a surprise appearance at Wembley, the roof would come off that place. So absence makes the heart grow fonder. I think he is wise beyond his years. He knows what he's doing. He's telling some stories. He's having some fun. But I really wondered going into that triple threat this past weekend, like, man, I don't know shit about wrestling, but I've heard a lot of people say that, boy, multi-man matches, triple threats, four ways and all that, they can be described as a clusterfuck. Like I've heard that before. And to know that there's a guy in there who maybe doesn't speak the best English, and there's another guy in there who's really not had a ton of in-ring action.
Yes, he's green. Yeah, of course.
So, that's just like, wow, there's a lot going on here. Are we sure we're ready for this? Like,
if I
were Chris Jericho, that would have been the last thing I would have been looking to do. It would be like, hey, man, I've proven myself. I don't have to get out here and reinvent the wheel. But he's still doing it, man, and he's getting a response. And maybe it's not the response that fans are looking for, but as long as they're making noise, good or bad, you're doing something right.
I agree with everything you say. And I just think that Chris got caught up in the world where it's guilty until proven innocent. Yes. Bullshit. And anyway, so he's done a great job. And I just... There's no better person backstage than Big Bill and what he's had to go through in his life and, you know, his struggles that he's had and come back. I'm glad we're using him. So just a great person. I noticed that they did a suplex on the floor and Steve grabbed his knee, which is in a brace. and he just came in and adjusted the brace. So he may not be 100% in this match here.
I don't think you ever saw Steve Austin 100% in the WWF.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm sure you're right, as a matter of fact.
Coach Rosie says, have you decided who is going to give your enshrinement speech at the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame? Of course, you're right around the corner from the TNT Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa. Have you started working on your speech? What are you thinking?
I have not worked on my speech at all, no. I thought about just getting it up there and winging it, but that's probably not the right thing to do. I haven't really thought that much about it. I'm still trying to process all this, to be honest with you. Because you know how I am about Hall of Fames. You know how I am about attention being put on me. I'm really not for it, but I'm sure I'll think about it. I'm sure I do. I have to announce who's going to do it or just have a person.
No.
Well, then it's just going to be a surprise.
Well, I, for one, am looking forward to it. I hope that everybody will join us at the Fez and Tragos Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa. It's coming up before you know it, and you're going to have people coming out of the woodwork offering to help induct you, including Coach Keith. He's offered to pull up and pull that thing out and introduce you.
Well, Coach, I hope it's not a morning thing because I know he'll fall asleep during the induction ceremonies. And I want to go back to the one thing here, and it was earlier when we were talking about Dave, and I wanted to comment on it when we were talking about Dave eating mayonnaise.
Yeah.
And Dave said, Brooke said, that's gross. But then she said, mayonnaise is delicious, though.
No, it's not.
No, it's not, Brooke. It's pus.
Okay? Yes.
Yes. I love Brooke. I love you. But mayonnaise, it doesn't belong on any. Maybe on a tomato sandwich. Maybe on a toasted tomato sandwich, very thin. But I've seen people just like, haven't you seen it before?
Silva does it, dude.
Yeah, just pour it on. We have grilled chicken at catering all the time. Yeah. And I saw one of the guys just take mayonnaise and squirt it all on its grilled chicken. I say that takes the grilled chicken is good for you. It's grilled, it's white meat, it's chicken, it's not, and you're just ruining it with all the fucking mayonnaise. Blah, blah. Anyway, so this match. Get back to what we're doing here, watching this. Hey, we're just two friends watching wrestling.
That's what we do.
That's right. You never know where the conversation goes. This is going to be, is this going to be a throwout finish, or are they really going to have somebody do a job here?
I don't think they're going to do a clean finish, if I had to guess. Yeah, they do have an overrun, too. They're really home stretching it here. But before we get out of here, we are just days removed now, as folks are listening to this, from one incredible pay-per-view, AEW Double or Nothing 2024. And Tony, it's pretty wild to think 5 years ago at the very first Double or Nothing, you're in the front row, shoulder to shoulder with your son. 5 years later, you both work there.
I still have the ticket stub that you purchased. And I brought it with me to Double or Nothing the other day, and Tony, I went and showed it to Tony. I mean, there's a Stone Cold Stunner. What is he going to beat him? Oh, yeah. Okay. Not a clean finish. I showed the ticket stub to Tony, and he hugged me.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, and everybody in there kind of put it over that was in his office that time. Like, wow. I said, here's where I was, row A, seat 7. And I would have been, by the way, where we are, I would have. Where we were sitting on the broadcast position.
That was right there.
It was right there.
Yes.
The exact same seat, because the broadcast booth would have been, table would have been gone, and that would have been pushed closer. And it was same spot. Here I am again. I thought about showing it on TV, but then I thought, you know what? I'm not going to make this about myself. So, but yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Of course, they're tying up Stone Cold here.
Right.
And the entire ministry is out there. The lights are flickering. And Undertaker's going to get down on one knee. Here comes the big purple light. This is crazy. It's silly. It's not my jam. Boy, it was resonating. 6.8 in an overrun. They passed 7. It's unbelievable to think about. Aaron Sheen wants to know, where would you rank Double or Nothing all time against AEW pay-per-views? Of course, you saw the first Double or Nothing as a fan. You've been there, part of the company for every subsequent pay-per-view. Where will this Double or Nothing rank you?
As far as Double or Nothings are concerned?
No, just all AEW pay-per-view.
Okay. Well, it's in the top 5. I really go back to Revolution 2020 as one of my favorite. That's when Jon Moxley won the world title. That's when Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin had a great match. And we had that spectacular tag team match between the Bucks and Kenny Omega and Hangman Adam Page. To me, that's one of the best. I don't think anything can top, though, Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, I was going to say that's got to be number one.
Yeah. Just for the atmosphere, for the actual thrill of being there and the crowd. I remember someone showed me what one of the Twitter cocksuckers said. It was a picture of me, and I was in the ring, and they had a high angle shot, and they showed seats behind me up in the upper deck that weren't filled yet. Someone said, look at them, they're lying, it wasn't sold out. That was early in the day before even started, you stupid son of a bitch. Yes, it was. So, but anyway, I digress. As Taz would say, it was quite a, that's number one by far. But I remember Revolution as well too, 2020. That was pretty, and that was at the Wintrust Arena in Chicago. That was pretty special. And I can tell you, I remember it because I'm able to talk about the matches. That was kind of the end of the Moxley Chris Jericho feud, and that was right before the pandemic. So a lot of memory as well. Now who's coming out here? And
that was the Higher Power. So who has the Undertaker been answering to? That's the Higher Power.
Okay.
And it wasn't revealed as of yet, but do you recall Higher Power? Recall who that was? We've talked about it
before. No, I've not. Who was the Higher Power?
A week later, it would be revealed that it was, in fact, Vince McMahon. So this entire time that his daughter was kidnapped and he was feuding with The Undertaker, it was actually Vince McMahon. But do you know who it was rumored to be, Tony?
Eric Bischoff.
The original plan, allegedly, one of the ideas bandied around, Christopher Daniels. Didn't happen,
really?
Of course. But yeah, what could have been if Christopher Daniels would have been the guy who was revealed to be the Higher Power? We'll talk more about that in the future.
Wow.
But right now, Tony, unfortunately, I can't believe it. This day flew by. It looks like it's about that time.
We are sending Dave Silva back to Texas, back to the border with his family covered in mayonnaise. Dave, stay there, you stupid motherfucker. And we're desperately out of time. See you next week on What Happened When. We come to you Wednesdays on Westwood One, but Mondays we come to you exclusively and ad-free only on
Patreon, patreon.com/WHW Monday, and of course, adfreeshows.com.